Welcome to the Ghost Rap Podcast. It's fast, it's fun, it's informative. This is your weekly dose of the news that matters on the markets with your host, the Finance Ghost. For more details on these stories and to make sure you get daily updates, visit ghostmail.co.za. The Ghost Rap Podcast is proudly brought to you by Mazars, a leading international audit, tax and advisory firm with a national footprint within South Africa. Not the rugby result any of us wanted this weekend, but at least we have Ghost Rap to get us ready for the week ahead. And we start with Bell Equipment, which had a pretty big week. It didn't start very well with the news of CEO Leon Huisen leaving the group, and he's good. He steered the group through a tough period in the world, and he managed to keep his head down at a time when the controlling family was in a very public and ugly battle with minority shareholders. Huisen will leave the group at the end of December 2023, and we don't know what is next for him. We also don't know what is next for Bell, as no successor has been announced as of yet. But after a rough start to the week, Bell then gave investors something to really smile about with news of very strong HEPS growth for the 6 months ended June. HEPS will be up by at least 30%, which suggests a minimum of 273 cents for the interim period. Now, you do need to be careful annualizing the results of a cyclical group like this, but a share price of 15 Rand 35 on Friday means an annualized price earnings ratio of less than 3x. That is cheap, which is why Bull has delivered a return of over 32.5% in the past 12 months. A low earnings multiple plus strong earnings growth is a lovely combination. Another industrials group doing all the things is Invicta. The strategy here is offshore acquisitions, with two deals announced in the same week, although they did not close at the same time. The first was a transaction in Singapore. After Invicta acquired the KMP operations in the UK and the USA back in 2022, they have now added KMP Far East to the portfolio, with a 50% stake that enables existing shareholders and management to retain a large shareholding and therefore be aligned with Invicta. Now, this business focuses on heavy-duty diesel engine parts for industrial and agricultural machinery. Then, Invicta went on to announce the acquisition of 100% of the IMEX part business in the UK. This is a leading independent truck parts distributor, although they supply parts for other vehicles as well, like buses and vans. Both deals have already closed, with the values and multiples not disclosed for either one. They are too small to have forced disclosures under JSE rules, so these were voluntary announcements by Invicta to tell the market what they've been up to. Moving on to mining, Tharisa gave the market an update on its quarterly production and the prices achieved for its various metals. Tharisa plays in the platinum group metals and chrome spaces, diversification which is welcomed by investors. And if we look at the third quarter versus the second quarter, so this is quarter on quarter, not versus the previous year, PGM or platinum group metals output was up 7.9% and chrome fell by 6.4%, so that's a mixed bag. In pricing, it was the other way around, with PGM prices down 16.6% and chrome up 7.8%. So Tharisa must have wished that the production numbers were actually the other way around, but the good news is that the net cash position has increased from $101.1 million at the end of March to $141.5 million at the end of June. This means that almost half of the market cap is attributed to net cash, something that investors obviously like to see. Sasol has gotten on the wrong side of air quality regulators. Now, we know that Secunda is an exceptionally pollutive facility, but the check and balance here is the minimum emission standards that are regulated by law. Sasol made an application for the boilers at the Secunda operations to be regulated on what they call an alternative basis, and the National Air Quality Officer said no. Sasol will need to appeal this now to the Minister of Forestry, Fisheries and the Environment. With over 7 billion rand spent in the past 5 years on emission reduction projects, it's not cheap to sort these issues out. And for sure, if it was a cheap and easy problem to fix at Secunda, Sasol wouldn't bother with asking for leniency from the regulator in the first place. Investors can expect to see cost pressures coming through from this, but I'm sure that nobody breathing the air around Secunda is going to complain. RMB Holdings actually has nothing to do with RMB or First Rand anymore. It's a relic on the JSE, a legacy investment holding company that now has a property portfolio that it needs to manage in such a way as to extract maximum value for shareholders. Sounds easy, but it's not. The underlying portfolio in the Atterbury stable is a bone of major contention. There have been several announcements around this, but the crux of it is that Atterbury owed money to RMB, so there's the bank coming up, and couldn't settle the amount in cash. Now, the loan agreements allowed Atterbury to try and issue shares to settle it instead of cash. RMB Holdings would then be diluted, and they had given a guarantee on the debt to RMB. So RMB didn't want the shares in Atterbury either and basically called on that guarantee instead of accepting the share issuance. RMB Holdings had been strongly against the share issuance, so the group happily settled RMB and stepped into the shoes of the lender. Complicated, I know. To add to the drama, RMB Holdings then called on Atterbury to repay the loan in cash, not in shares. This puts the Atterbury board under pressure to figure out where the 487 million rand required is going to come from for the settlement. RMB Holdings clearly has a strategy here, and there must have been no shortage of boardroom fighting before this step was taken. At the end of the week, in a final embarrassing announcement for the week, RMB Holdings had to recall a recording from the results call that featured the CEO and CFO talking about the Atterbury issue without realizing that the mic was hot. The mic is nowhere near as hot as the collars of the executives in this fight, with investors waiting to see just how much value can actually flow to the top. Another property fund in a battle at the moment is Accelerate Property Fund. They're not fighting with anyone in particular, but they are fighting with the macroeconomic circumstances that they find themselves in. When a trading statement was initially released for the year ended March 2023, the distribution was expected to be at least 15% lower than the prior year. At the time, the company blamed the large increase in the number of shares in issue for the decrease in the distribution. That's annoying, of course, but it's not the end of the world. But now, things are looking much worse. In a rather shocking announcement, the company has guided that there is no distribution for the year at all. This obviously isn't anything to do with the number of shares in issue. Instead, it has to do with the balance sheet and a need to preserve cash in this environment. That is not good news. Bytes Technology Group has been an incredibly strong performer, and I'm glad to have it in my portfolio. The UK-based software security and cloud services group doesn't seem to be slowing down either, with the company using the AGM to give a brief update on performance since full-year results were released in May 2023. In the first 4 months of the new financial year, we've seen double-digit growth in gross profit and adjusted operating profit. The thing to keep an eye on, though, is gross invoiced income, which grew at a significantly higher rate than gross profit. There have been high-volume, low-gross-margin software deals in this period. In other words, margins are coming under pressure at Bytes, and because growth is so high overall, it doesn't really matter right now. But high growth doesn't last forever. And with Bytes trading on a high multiple, the market is pricing in a lot of that high growth already. We end off with Absa, with the bank adding its voice to the recent selection of updates in the banking sector. The credit loss ratio has come sharply into focus this year for all the banks, which is not surprising as higher interest rates have started to bite. Consumers love borrowing at low rates and then spending beyond their means, which is what drives demand-pull inflation. When central banks tighten the screws, affordability drops and credit loss ratios increase, all while inflation moderates unless it was supply-side inflation, which is then even more dangerous, for example, fuel prices. These are normal business cycles, and banks are highly exposed to them. For the 6 months to June, Absa still enjoyed very strong growth in income. Net interest income grew by mid-teen percentages, although non-interest revenue could only manage high single digits. Thanks to good cost control, pre-provision operating profit was up by mid-teens. But then along come the impairments, with the credit loss ratio jumping from 0.91% to between 1.25% and 1.30%. The net impact, headline earnings per share, is only up by low single digits. And return on equity is likely to be below 17%, which is a significant drop from 17.7% in the comparable interim period. Banks are still doing well per se, but without a doubt, credit loss ratios are now starting to bite. And that's a wrap. Please remember that nothing you hear on the Ghost Wrap podcast should be taken as advice. Please do your own research and visit ghostmail.co.za for more insights into the market.